The future. A relentless, desperate wasteland ravaged by nuclear war. With the destruction of the internet and search engines such as Google, accurate information about the past is traded like currency. Two brave travelers are commissioned with the dangerous task of going back through time to gather as much information as they can to find out about the late 20th and early 21st centuries in hopes that a future society may rebuild what was lost and avoid the horror of a smoldering radioactive planet. But there is a catch. The travelers' journey back across eons of time is a one-way trip, leaving them stranded in the past.
Wait, what?
There's no way to communicate their findings to the future other than burying reinforced time capsules in the ground.
Are you serious?
In the hopes that one day recordings such as these will be unearthed to provide a glimpse of the world that once was.
All right.
This is the mission of the crispy coated robots, and it must succeed.
Hey, it's Jim.
And it's George. Welcome once again to Crispy Coated Robots.
Yes, we are back.
We are back.
Well, you know, from last week.
From last week. Or whatever. Maybe a month. Maybe it's been a month since you've listened.
Yeah, but
good for you. Yeah. Welcome back.
We are here doing it still, and
we still have no idea.
This is my favorite topic today. This is probably my best show. I can't believe this came down from the home office. When I saw this, I was like smiling from ear to ear. We're doing best novelty songs and the worst 70s sitcom.
Well, I am required to say this. This is episode number 71.
Okay.
You gave me so much grief last time about 70. Sorry. I didn't even realize you were making fun of me until after the program.
The fourth level of seven.
Yeah. Yeah. So 71.
Sorry about that.
I only have a few jobs here. And
yes,
one of my jobs is to give the show number.
Yeah, so, you make sure you get that right.
So, worst TV shows of the 70s.
Mm.
And these are American shows. So
yes, yeah.
No shows from Spain that I know of.
There's some good, there's some bad ones from Spain, but this is America.
Oh God, they're awful. And novelty songs. So Jim, what is the definition of a novelty song?
It's any kind of funny song or song by like an artist that, you know, just had a one hit wonder. They kind of captured the attention of America and kind of made them laugh for a little bit, you know. Maybe covered something that was topical, a pop culture item, or they, you know, and they just did a funny song, and people really kind of gravitated to it. It's a lifestyle thing.
So are they always funny?
For me, they were. I mean, you might have a couple novelty ones that weren't funny
for
you.
Because I've got a novelty song that I don't know that it's humorous.
It's probably like Marvin the Android talks for 3 minutes, or Bilbo Baggins or whatever, one of those Leonard Nimoy songs, or Mr. Tambourine
Man.
Well,
that's a novelty song, but not on purpose. It's humorous when Shatner does Mr. Tambourine.
Mr. Tambourine Man.
Mr. Tambourine Man.
Mr. Tambourine Man. Or Lucy's Sky Diamonds.
He does an awful version of Rocket Man.
Rocket Man. Yeah, it's good stuff though. I mean, I like it. It's funny.
So humor is probably an element,
yes,
but not a requirement.
Not requirement. Okay, you know, because it could capture the attention of America.
You'll like, find out what I mean later in the show.
Like some people would call the song, a recent song, "What Does the Fox Say?" A novelty song.
What does the fox say?
And you know.
I would call that a novelty song.
Did I really laugh at it? No. Did I think it was kind of...
Oh, did you see the video? Because I laughed at the video.
Did I think it was kind of goofy? Yeah. You know, it was... But humor was the intent there. So, I think...
Okay.
Unless they're a serious artist and really wonder what the fox says. I don't know. But we will...
What does the fox say?
I don't know what the fox says. But we'll go ahead and start here, George, with your worst sitcom of the 70s. I'm trying to figure if we have any matches here, because there's a lot of bad shows.
So many bad ones, as with each decade. Okay, we're not just picking on the 70s, but
we'll do the 80s and 90s, I'm sure, but possibly the 60s. Yes,
this, we've got some treasures here. We've got some real stink turds.
oh, come on.
Which is the first time we've ever said stink turds on the podcast.
Really?
So,
okay.
Well, on the air.
All right. So, what is your number five?
Okay. Well, this is November to May of 77.
Okay.
And it is the Brady Bunch Hour.
Oh, you mean the The Variety Hour.
They had a variety show. They had 9 shows in total. Okay.
But does it qualify as a sitcom, though? Because I was going to put this too, but it was a Variety Hour.
Because
the sitcom is like a 30-minute situational comedy. The sitcom means a situational comedy. So what I'm saying is this was a variety show that was, you know, they took sitcom actors playing sitcom roles.
Okay, well,
but
that's what I've got for number 5.
Go ahead.
So should I even continue?
Go ahead and continue, but we'll.
I'm a little embarrassed now.
We're gonna
feel like the salt thing.
We're gonna stamp
a mineral.
We're gonna stamp a DQ on it. But go ahead and give your pitch.
Why am I going to try to
disqualified from the beginning? So
why am I? I don't need to.
Because I would put it in there, but I was like, oh, it's you got to be 30 minutes. Got to be situational comedy. Got to be something.
I didn't know there was like a 30-minute thing.
Well, sitcom. It's a situational comedy. It's usually thirty minutes long. I don't remember a sitcom being 60 minutes long, unless they. You know, we talked
so
about.
So this is the worst TV shows.
Yes. Well, I thought it was worst sitcom of the 70s.
No, worst TV shows.
Okay, we could change it to that. That's fine. Because
we're not changing.
I just said a few minutes ago it's the worst sitcom of the 70s.
I never listened to what you say.
And you went, mm-hmm. Yep, you're right.
Again, I never listened to a word you say in these things.
The art for our show says worst sitcom of the 70s.
No, it says TV shows.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, we'll go ahead.
Worst shows of the 70s.
Go ahead and continue.
I am totally bamboozled now. Because I have quite a few that are not sitcoms.
Okay. Well, we can change it. It's no big deal. The Home Office, they can complain. Or Nebula
can
come.
The Home Office said worst TV shows of the 70s.
Nebula can come in. Actually, I'm looking at the art right now. It says worst 70s sitcoms.
Wow. Okay. Oh, you're right.
So we'll go ahead and stamp a DQ on this first one.
I don't even need to be here.
Yeah. We'll stamp a DQ on that first one. But it was really bad, though.
I have some sitcoms, but this is not one of them.
But okay. But it was really bad, the Variety Hour, because they actually play themselves. It was so bad that Marsha didn't even take part in it. Or no, Jan.
Jan. It was,
Jan.
Yeah, the yeah. actress that played Jan on the series. But the premise is that they are the Bradys. And it's the show within a show storyline is just garbage, even for that time. And, you know, the Brady Bunch was a pretty good sitcom.
Yeah, it was, you know, a lot of people give it cornball element, but you know,
well, but back in the day,
yeah.
You know, it really, I think it did its job. So to cash out on their success, ABC made this show and, It's ranked by TV Guide.
You're a little rattled that you didn't get the right information.
Well, I know what
this
my
is karma for you, like saying, "Oh, well, how'd you mess that up? How'd you mess that up?" And now you've royally messed this up. And
well,
this is karma on this show.
Here's the problem: I'm not just thinking about this; I'm mentally going through my list,
which is garbage.
It's
all right. Let me just save you.
Stink turd.
I will do my number 5, and you can just go over there and reevaluate your list.
Should I even write that? I'm not even going to write it on the board.
Don't. It's DQ'd already.
Okay.
So it's disqualified.
I'm really disappointed
because
I've got one coming up that I really need to talk about that I know
you can talk about it all you want, but it's not going to make the list. All right. So my number 5 is a 30-minute sitcom that was a spinoff of Three's Company. And it hurts my heart to say this, but The Ropers is my number 5.
Watch this. I enjoyed it.
I think the funny thing about it was the opening is probably one of the goofiest and best openings of all time. They have basically Stanley Roper, played by Norman Fell.
Oh, yeah.
Dancing with a plunger. His wife dancing. And, of course, who's become like a pretty popular actor now, Jeffrey Tambor was a regular on the Ropers as the real estate agent that lived next door trying to get the Ropers to move out because – in the spinoff episode of Three's Company, you have the Ropers looking at this place, and he's doing all he can to make sure they don't buy the place because he considers the Ropers low class and would drive the rent down. And it's weird that this didn't work. I mean, they have the Three's Company people visit every once in a while, but it's because the Ropers are such a strong couple downstairs. They have their own kind of in-jokes and jokes that happen every time. But it kind of smells like this. It smells like somebody told the producers of Three's Company, Don Knotts wants to be on this show. And he wants to be on the show in some way. And they're like, well, we have the Ropers who are the landlord. But wait a minute. what if we spin them off and do another show and bring Don Knotts as Mr. Furley and he could be the landlord?
Do you think it was like a contractual obligation to those actors?
No, I hear that Norman Fell and Audra Lindley, who played the Ropers, right, didn't want to do it. Because when you're sitting in something successful like this, this is a
why
nice,
move on?
It's a nice nest egg. But, you know, we've seen spinoffs work well. Laverne and Shirley and Mork. Yeah, but
Mork and Mindy.
Just seeing this, too, it's like, do we need a full hour of Three's Company? You know, because the Three's Company was based around a mix-up, you know, and it was done in, you know, 30 minutes. Like, he's petting a dog in one room. They're like, ooh, come on, give it to me, bro.
It was always
something misconstrued as something sexual. So the Ropers do their own thing. They, you know, they have a family living next door. It just didn't work, and it hurts my heart to put up at number five on my worst sitcoms of 1970s is The Ropers.
All right.
So there we go.
And that is a true sitcom, so.
Yes, you know. that will make the list by default. If George's list is all variety shows, I might have a serious win on this episode here. So let's move on to your number five novelty song, and let's pray to God my fingers are crossed that is actually a novelty song. that caused a cough.
Go ahead,
number five.
This episode sucks.
I love it. I love it.
I hate this
number
episode.
Number five. Go ahead.
All right. Well,
it's a song called Stairway to Heaven by this group called Led Zeppelin. Funniest song I ever heard. No, what is it?
All right. So this is a novelty song by the comedy rock duo Barnes & Barnes.
Yes.
Okay. Released in 1978 as a single. Interestingly, it really caught on from the music video made in 1980, 2 years later, by
Bill Paxton.
Yes.
Yeah.
So he was a filmmaker before he turned world famous actor. And it was on regular rotation on MTV. Do you know what? This was like the most requested song on the Dr. Demento show.
Yeah. Wasn't Barnes & Barnes, wasn't half of it Billy Mumy from Lost in Space?
So Fish Heads is the song.
Yeah. Okay.
But yeah.
Yeah.
So the screechy, high-pitched chorus, and we'll put the links. We'll get Tom Wu to put the
links
on there. But fish heads, roly-poly fish heads, eat them up, yum. Yeah,
that was pretty much it.
And it goes on to detail what fish heads can't do, which is important, you know, back in the 80s. Like they can't answer questions because they can't talk.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
They can't play baseball. They can't wear sweaters. They can't dance. The only thing that I remember that the song says they can do is they can get into movies without buying tickets or something, which is good.
But
they can't play drums. And I think my favorite, they can't drink cappuccinos with Oriental women.
Ah, yeah. That's always important.
I don't know why that it is so specific. But
let's make the song a novelty song. Yeah.
Yeah. But Fish Heads.
I don't remember seeing this one on MTV as much as I remember seeing it.
That's where I first saw it.
First saw it on a show called Night Flight, which was overnight. And they would show on USA, they would show really weird videos and stuff like that. I remember seeing it there. MTV a couple times. But yeah, Fish Heads did make an impact.
And this is one of those earworms. I'm warning you now. If you click the link that Tom Who puts out there, It will you'll have it in your head for a week.
And I'm surprised that it was 78 when you say, because I remember in the 80s it kind of like getting
The video.
Yeah, MTV 82 really kind of make an impact then. So, but it was I didn't realize it was out that long before then.
Yeah, so 2 years dormant, but it really kind of exploded with this video. Again, I'm impressed that you knew Bill Paxton made this.
Yeah,
because for years I never knew that, and the video is bizarre.
Oh, it's bizarre. It's fish heads.
I kind of wish he had stayed with filmmaking because he could have rivaled some of David Lynch's stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty Lynchian. My number five is a video I saw on MTV too, but MTV also. It features comedian Rodney Dangerfield, kind of playing off the new trend called rap. It's Rapping Rodney, can't get a break. And basically, Rodney Dangerfield does his classic Get No Respect jokes, which are actually linked up in time, and like he's rapping over a beat, you know.
I don't even know that he knew there was music going on.
Oh, and there's a lot. I actually have the dance version where he's like, what's this? play some Sinatra, you know, where's the horns? You know, this whole kind of funny thing he does. But, you know, he does the jokes in there, you know, just tons of no respect jokes. The funniest ones, too, I think, because I've seen some, you know, on Carson that weren't as funny as these that are included in Rappin' Rodney. But the video has him walking around, rapping in all these situations. Talks about Dr. Vinny Boombots in there. That was a you know, a gag in his yeah. Tons of wife jokes in there too about her cooking. But the song, of course, for me,
we were so poor, Grandpa would sneeze and make tinsel for the Christmas tree.
Well, that wasn't in there. That was one of the you know, ones that, you know.
Oh, sorry.
They had the, yeah.
Maybe that was the Hanukkah.
But you know, it was a whole album. He made a whole album of raps too, but Rappin' Rodney was the single. It was one of the first Hot 100 rap records, and it was an early MTV hit. As a video, he's telling all this to Dr. Father Guido Sarducci in the video.
Yeah.
So and also the video, we have an executioner who takes off her executioner's hat, and it's Pat Benatar.
That's right.
Yeah. So, but
God, that was a long time.
And then a dream sequence where Rodney goes to heaven and he gets condemned and still doesn't get any respect in heaven. But Rappin' Rodney gets to go into heaven, but regular Rodney is left out. So my number five is Rappin' Rodney with his jokes that became a big early rap hit, believe it or not, on MTV, and I still enjoy it to this day.
So let me ask you an eschatological question.
Yes.
Do you think Rappin' Rodney is in heaven?
He probably is. He probably is.
I don't know that would be the heaven that I would want to go to.
I get no respect. No respect at all. Not even from George. Not even from George Pageant on this show. I'll tell you, get no respect. You know, I do a hit rap song, and this kid over here.
Why are you doing Rocky Balboa?
I get no respect from this guy. You know, I can't believe this George Pageant guy coming in here doing sitcom. You know, he does variety shows for sitcoms. Who does he think he is? All right, so go ahead with your number four. Hopefully,
all right.
Fingers crossed, sitcom.
I think this is going to be a sitcom. I've got the bell ready here.
Okay. All right.
So in 1970s, McLean Stevenson was this hot property due to the success he had with MASH. Okay. Mm-hmm. But this one single-handedly put that run to an end. Talking about Hello Larry.
Yes, this is my number one.
Oh.
Because I was so into radio at the time, and I was excited that he was playing a radio disc jockey. WKRP was already on the air. And, you know, great theme song, though. It's probably one of my top five theme songs. Hello Larry, Portland is a long way from L.A., a long way.
And that's
way.
It. He was in L.A., and he got divorced. So when you get divorced and you're in radio, you have to go to Portland, Oregon, apparently, with his two teenage daughters. So this aired from January of 79 to April of I guess, April of 80?
Yeah, it was going pretty quick because it was on that power lineup they had on NBC with I remember just Different Strokes, Hello Larry, Facts of Life.
Yeah, I think Different Strokes was right before it. But what's crazy about
great lead-in.
This
yeah.
is you have these veteran writers that wrote for Ozzy and Harriet and Andy Griffin and One Day at a Time. So
Andy Griffith, sorry.
Andy Griffith, sorry.
Andy, Merv Griffin.
And Merv Griffin. But, you know, TV Guide, your favorite magazine, spoiler.
Yes.
It's number 12 on their worst shows of all time.
Yeah.
I remember Carson, Johnny Carson, the Tonight Show.
Everybody's making fun of McLean Stevenson because he left that MASH situation. Yeah.
And he just relentlessly, every chance he got, would just talk bad about this, which is crazy because it was on NBC. It was on the same
And then network. McLean was a guest too and very funny on the show too. I've seen him on Tonight Show a few times. And it kind of hurts my heart because I lived in Bloomington, Illinois, and he's from Bloomington Normal, and he was like the superstar of the of that whole area, you know, like McLean Stevenson. He came from Bloomington, you know, and he talks about Bloomington on some of his appearances on the talk show too. And,
you know, the thing is, a lot of times we're harsh on the actor. They're just reading lines, and there's somebody directing it, and so they're not responsible, but we hold them responsible. And in this case, Carson just crucified him. relentlessly all the time.
But a very funny Hello, guy, Larry. Though. Very funny guy. Hello, Larry. Like I said, a great theme song, too. Hello, Larry. And they did get a season two. Which basketball star was a regular in season two? Actually, a regular. In the credits.
I don't know.
Meadowlark Lemon.
Oh, wow.
Joined the cast in season two.
Globetrotter.
Hopefully. Yeah. The Globetrotter could even save Hello, Larry.
Wow. That's when you know you have a dud.
Hello, Larry. Portland
because those
is
guys.
Long way from LA.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So, Hello, Larry, and that's your number one. So
my number one.
Moving along.
My number four was I was into the, they used to have these trading cards of Universal movie monsters where you'd, see, trade Dracula and Frankenstein, Creature from the Black Lagoon. So I was big into monsters at the time, a young kid. Well, I find out that CBS was having a show called Struck by Lightning.
Oh, wow.
With Jack Elam.
Yeah, this is on my honorable mention.
So basically, it's about a guy, a teacher who inherits a house. And the butler there is actually Frankenstein's monster, played by Jack Elam. If you don't know who Jack Elam is, Google. We'll probably have something in the link or for this show. They have like a promo or something. But he was kind of this actor who mainly played in Westerns, but he had kind of this eye that went off to the side, kind of Marty Feldman-ish. Struck by Lightning was supposed to be a vehicle for him and also to play upon, I think, which was the resurgence of monsters and scary stuff at the time. But the show just did not work. I remember watching it and going, oh, man. Even as a kid, I realized it.
Yeah.
It was not good. But
it was supposed to go for 11 episodes, and they did three. And CBS just killed it.
Yeah. Which is sad. It was kind of a good idea, I think, but ended up disappointing. Like I said, it was from 79, too. That's kind of like the sweet spot for bad sitcoms because we had The Ropers from 79, Hello, Larry from 79, and we have Struck by Lightning, which debuted in September of 79. Only ran to October of 79. Didn't even make it to the new decade. So
didn't even make it to Halloween.
Which is like, that should have been like,
they should have launched it.
That should have been a Struck by Lightning marathon, right there. But yeah,
all three shows.
That's my number four. And on to your number four novelty song.
All right. This is probably on your list, or at least your honorable mentions. This is 1974, Ray Stevens, The Streak.
Audible mention, yes.
Yeah, so for some reason, streaking, running nude, was
a big deal.
Weird fad in the 70s.
Yeah.
You can see even on the Academy Awards, David Niven encounters a streaker. But I mean, it was this huge thing for some reason. But in this novelty song, Ray Stevens plays a reporter. In each verse, he's interviewing people that have encountered this guy running around in the buff. So,
and they call him The Streak.
Yeah.
Boogie day.
It's actually a good little tune.
Yeah.
There's a supermarket, a service station, and then a high school gymnasium during a basketball playoff. But it's one of his most successful recordings.
So. And he does all the voices of the people he interviews too, right?
Right.
Lily, what did you see out there? We saw, the whole thing. But you're right. Very good. Comedic stuff. It's in my honorable mention list. When I researched these, I didn't realize so many songs I liked were novelty songs. And my number four comes, I was a huge fan of SCTV, and Bob and Doug McKenzie released an album just making fun of albums, basically. If you listen to the whole album, it's kind of like a parody of people, albums, the groove. They talk about the groove of the album. They talk about how to end an album. But one part of the album, they have to have their hit single off the album. So they gathered with Geddy Lee of the band Rush, who's also from Canada, big Canada. And Geddy put on his best Canadian accent. He really kind of Canadian it up. And so it was came up with Take Off. Take Off, which was their basically their catchphrase. Take Off, eh? So they did a whole song called Take Off to the Great White North. Take off. It's a beauty way to go. So they used a lot of the stuff that you're hearing on the album that Bob and Doug are talking about already. So it's on side one. So when you get there, like, okay, it's time for our hit single part of the album. Eh? We've brought in Geddy Lee from Rush. My favorite part, too, is when the song actually ends, they're like, hey, Geddy, let's do another one. And Geddy Lee's like, slow down, eh? So Take Off is my number four from Bob and Doug
McKenzie. Actually a good song.
Yes, actually a good song, too. Yeah. And they started off with the theme song. And they end with the theme song. So it feels like you're actually part of the Great White North show, along with Geddy Lee singing a hook, you know.
Yeah.
But it's funny, like the whole album, they're like, oh, the hook goes here. You know, they're doing this kind of all, oh, this is where they start singing, shut up, you know. So Take Off is my number four.
Nice. Nicely done.
Let's see. So are we back to sitcoms, or did you do? No, you didn't. You're number four. You
did. I did number four. Oh,
okay.
Sitcom.
The streak. You did the streak. Okay.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What is your number three worst sitcom? And we'll take a break after that. It's a variety show, isn't it?
No.
It's Columbo.
No. So again,
it's with Doctor Who.
Due to my confusion, I was so excited to bring this to the table.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
At the time, you need to hush your mouth. At the time, this was the most expensive television show ever produced for an American audience. And unfortunately, it's one of the greatest flops. So before there was Snowpiercer, there was Supertrain.
Yes.
1979.
Trying to make the Love Boat on a train.
A Love Boat on a train, yeah, because it had swimming pools, medical center.
To this one, actually.
What?
They hyped it up so big as a kid. God, I was looking forward to it. Huge,
but a library, a shopping mall, even a discotheque and a gym. Supposedly, the train could go from L.A. to New York in 36 hours, and it was awful. First of all, they paid $10 million just for the train models, and one of them fell off its little track and broke. And I say little, it was a pretty big thing. But they hyped it, like you said, Jim, so much. And that first show, Steve Lawrence, George Hamilton, Vicki Lawrence, no relation to Steve Lawrence. But anyway, they yanked it after 9 episodes. But it was their answer. It was NBC's answer to The Love Boat, where we can have an ensemble of characters that change out, you know, every week. And they always, they would have like a mystery element to it. You know, there would be, oh no, who stole the necklace or whatever. But obviously not a sitcom in the traditional sense of sitcoms, but.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So many things you could have chosen too. This is very disappointing.
I totally missed the sitcom.
This thing is very bad. But anyway, okay, we'll do my number three sitcom and we'll just move on. And mine is.
Right now you're the only one on the board for sitcoms.
All right. My number three sitcom comes from 1977. A lot of people excited about, you know, this is actually, you know, space stuff, Star Trek, Star Wars, May 7th, 1977. A mid-season replacement comes from the creator of Get Smart, that is Buck Henry. It's about space. It has one of my favorite actors of all time in it, Richard Benjamin. It is called Quark. Yeah. And the pilot aired in 77. It actually added in 78 after Star Wars and all that stuff kind of took off.
Yeah, I remember those two twins.
Yes. But basically, they are a interstellar garbage unit. they're space garbage men. Has Richard Benjamin and has one of my favorite actors of all time, Tim Thomerson, who's very underrated, great comedian. He's playing a humanoid with a set of both male and female chromosomes called Gene and Gene.
Yes.
This is before Caitlyn Jenner and all that stuff. So great setup on some of this stuff.
I think that's what gave Bruce Jenner the idea.
And they, like you said, they had some amazing women playing the twins and stuff like that. It just didn't take off, so to speak.
Very campy, but
it
was intended to be campy.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Get Smart. I mean, and Buck Henry did with Mel Brooks. I mean, that was it. Seems like a win-win. You have Buck Henry. You have Richard Benjamin. You have Tim Thomerson. You have space. Everybody is, especially when it comes back on in February 78. It's almost like Happy Days after American Graffiti. They're like, oh, do we have any shows like this? This
exactly.
is what they said. Right. So they put this on, and everybody's waiting for a great space show, and this doesn't happen. Disappointing, but
gotta
Quark.
For Battlestar Galactica.
Yep. Quark is my number three worst sitcom of the 70s,
all right.
Sadly. So it is break time. George can maybe look at his list and reevaluate things during the intermission.
Yeah, let's see. How bad is this going to be?
He's got, okay, yeah, yeah. McMillan and Wife was not a sitcom. Gotcha. You got that? Neither was McLeod. All right, you got that?
No, I've got, what I've got coming up is...
possibly passable?
I think one is definitely going to make it in because it is ridiculous.
All right.
Yeah. So I'm happy to report that the rest of my submissions will, in fact, be...
real sitcoms.
Sitcoms.
Okay. All right. So our intermission today is a Wii gaming background music. Wii gaming background music.
Oh, the Nintendo thing.
Yes. Oh. So,
yeah. I haven't heard this in a while.
Yeah. So enjoy Wii gaming background music. How'd you feel? Did you?
Oh, that's the music. Like when you're making your avatar, that's the music that they play.
Doot, doot. Yeah. Good stuff.
I don't know about that, but that is, I recognize it.
Okay, good. All right. So we are moving on now to our number three novelty song of all time. What you got, George?
All right. So the premise of this song came from a joke told by a child of the friend of the writer. And he wrote this whole song within an hour. It's from 1958, The Purple People Eater.
Oh, yeah.
So
it was you
paused, and I was like, wait, is this not novelty?
No.
I'm so gun-shy now with this episode.
They made a movie with Ned Beatty.
But written with, was he the purple?
I don't know. Eater? It was made like 20 years after, which didn't make any sense to me.
But Sheb Woolley. Yeah, he wrote and performed it. Basically, the Purple People Eater, the song talks about how this creature from outer space, the one-eyed, one-horned, flying Purple People Eater, arrives to Earth because it wants...
To eat people.
No, to be in a rock and roll band.
Really? I didn't know that.
Have you not heard this song?
I've heard it, but I thought it was just like coming to eat people.
I want to be in a rock and roll band.
Sheb Woolley. He had one of those infomercials, too. He had one of those commercials, too, that had greatest hits commercials. So did Ray Stevens.
Yeah. Now, he actually, he was in a lot of Western movies and things. Are you familiar with him as an actor?
No. Just as, I remember he had his commercials. Sheb Woolley's greatest hits. Buy him. You know, and he played the purple PV. Right. And they had another song called Satin Sheets to Lay On, Satin Sheets to Play On.
Yeah, he was an actor, and so you probably don't know this. He is credited, he's a voice actor credited for something very unique. Have you ever heard of the Wilhelm Scream?
Mm-mm.
Really?
No, go ahead and do it for me.
So, no, maybe we can put it in the show. Maybe Tom can put it in the show for us.
Yeah.
But the Wilhelm Scream, it's this stock sound effect. I'm surprised you as a filmmaker don't know this.
No.
It's been used in so many TV series. It's this scream, and it's actually Sheb Woolley, the scream, but it's kind of this go-to, almost like clip art scream. When somebody is shot and falls from a great height or an explosion, you know, or something, they used it in a movie. The character, I think, was Private Wilhelm or something back in the 50s, a Western. But it is used. We're going to have a link of Wilhelm Scream because
yeah,
it is used probably hundreds, maybe thousands of times in American cinema. It's kind of just that go-to scream that people use.
Wow. So you can't,
I'm not going to do it.
I do so many impersonations on this show. You can't even do one.
I'm not going to do it. But we'll get Tom to put a link of the Wilhelm Scream. Matter of fact, Tom, if you're, he's not in here.
No.
If you'll, when you listen to this, when you edit this for us, put the intro or whatever, go ahead and get a link for all the times the Wilhelm Scream is used. You won't believe it. You've heard it all your life in movies that you watch, Jim.
Yes.
But, it's this guy. It's the Purple People Eater guy.
So, you know what Sheb Woolley's real name is?
No.
Ben Colder.
Oh, okay.
Which I was like, that's a pretty cool name.
Yeah, why would you change it to Sheb?
Well, maybe it's more Western because he was doing the whole Western thing.
I've never even heard the name Sheb except for him.
He's the only Sheb. That was smart. All right.
Yeah, I guess.
All right. So, Purple People Eater. Purple People Eater is your number three. My number three is from comedian Steve Martin, who was taking off the whole big craze that happened in the late 70s for people to see King Tut.
Yeah, at Tutankhamun
a museum.
Went on
yes,
tour.
Yes, he gave his life for tourism, as he says in the song. But Steve Martin did this on Saturday Night Live. When I first saw it, I was like, oh, I got to have that. Song came out on Warner Brothers Records on his, I think, Wild and Crazy Guy album, too. It was a single.
Yeah.
Great stuff, though.
I had the album, and that's how he closes the album.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just a parody of how people really did kind of lose their mind over this King Tut exhibit. But, born in Arizona, moved to Babylonia, King Tut. And then
Condo made a stoner.
Then he even does the disco tuck, which a lot of these songs.
No, the disco tuck.
And a lot of the rock artists got caught doing disco songs at this particular time.
Yeah.
So
even the Stones, yeah.
But it's actually I didn't give proper credit. Steve Martin and the Tutankhamuns, who did the whole song. But the dancing by the Nile disco tut. The ladies loved his style.
What is the thing about? Something about a crocodile.
Yeah, rocking for a mile, rocking tut. He ate a crocodile.
He ate a crocodile.
He gave his life for tourism.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's a really good one. And it's one of those things that probably just kind of brewed out of a skit. And Steve Martin, took it and had an actual hit with it, too.
Yeah, and I remember on Saturday Night Live, he's got the headgear and full costume regalia. Yes. Yeah.
And everybody in the band does, too.
Yeah.
And I love that. I bought the single as a kid, and I love the cover. It's basically Steve Martin looked like he's playing guitar real seriously with that kind of guitar face that, he's crunching his face up like he's hitting some sort of crazy note. But it was released as a single 78, sold over 1 million copies, reached number 17 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. So this might be our highest charting entry. We'll have to see.
Bigger than Fish Heads?
Yeah, he previewed the song on a 78 episode of Saturday Night Live. So as you said too, also included on Wild and Crazy Guy. So there you go. King Tut is my number three. What's your number three?
Number three song.
Oh, you did Purple Peter.
Yeah. Purple. Don't dismiss it. Like
I can't
that.
Even say that already. What's your number two, worst sitcom? And I got my fingers crossed that this is a sitcom and
it is, you can settle down. This is probably the worst sitcom of worst sitcoms. So Jim,
because it's not a sitcom. It's the, Carol Burnett Variety Hour. Sorry,
you're loving this.
This
so
is going to be an
you're
ongoing joke.
You're loving this too much.
It's the Tim Conway Variety Hour.
So exactly, Dorf plays golf. No, what do you get when you combine the talents of Forrest Tucker from F Troop?
Yes,
and Bob Denver from Gilligan's Island.
Forrest Tucker, you get Dusty's Trail.
Dusty's Trail.
Yeah,
from 73 to 74,
and this is like Sherwood Schwartz basically ripping off his own.
Yeah, it's the Schwartz brothers, and it is a total ripoff of Gilligan's Island, just set in the Old West. So
reason this didn't make it for me because I never saw an episode because I didn't want to put something I haven't seen.
Oh, it was bad.
Yeah,
Saw it. Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, and I'm a kid, so I'm like, it's Gilligan.
Yeah.
I watched him in Far Out Space Nuts.
Because I did the same thing. Everything he was in, I watched.
I love Bob Denver.
Everything.
I didn't get in as much in the Dobie Gillis stuff because that
was pre-Gilligan.
That was, but when I would see him play the hipster,
I don't know what is about Bob Denver with it. Was seemed like I had to draw.
He just Gilligan was such a lovable character.
Yeah,
but in this case, two coachmen, Forrest Tucker and Bob Denver, and five passengers. I mean, it is such a blatant ripoff. They have the stagecoach that gets separated from the wagon train on the way to California. Okay. And instead of headhunters on the island, you have Native American Indians. Okay.
Yeah.
And it's just, it is so bad. Dusty is Bob Denver's Gilligan.
Yes.
The wagon master, Tucker.
Forrest Tucker. Yeah.
Forrest Tucker.
Skipper.
Is the skipper. You have the millionaire Brookhavens.
Yes.
So you've got the Howls covered there. You even have the Tina Louise Ginger Grant. There's a
Lulu McQueen. Is that the Ginger Grant?
I didn't remember her name, but yeah, a music hall singer. And you even have this girl next door, Marianne type called Betsy.
Played by Laurie Saunders from Petticoat Junction.
Yes.
Woo.
Yes.
Man, hold up.
And then there's even kind of this professor role, but they copied everything but failed to copy the chemistry between the cast because
okay, I gotta ask you,
so awful
theme song. Do they explain what happens on Dusty's Trail?
I don't remember, probably
if they ripped off everything else, the theme song is probably gonna be
I do Dusty, know
it looks like it was sung by a country singer, Mel Street, so I'm guessing it's probably balladish.
Well, I know that Schwartz wrote the song, one of the Schwartz brothers wrote it, but I don't remember what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, they thought, well, we caught lightning in a bottle with Gilligan's Island. Let's just do, but it did get 26 episodes.
Wow.
I think they kept thinking, well, this is going to turn around. People are going to catch on or whatever, but no, never.
Dang. Dusty's Trail.
Dusty's Trail.
Mm. All right. My number.
So I'm pretty proud of that one.
My number two is actually a spinoff from Welcome Back, Kotter, which I didn't know. If you saw the lead actor, you think it was a spinoff from Happy Days, who really, really loved this guy in Happy Days as he played the original Arnold before Al. And that is, of course, who went on to do the Pat Morita, who ended up being on The Karate Kid. But there's a spinoff from Happy Days where basically he is now Mr. T. This is Mr. T before.
Yeah.
Mr. T.
Yeah.
Mr. T and Tina came off. I was excited for this show as a kid.
He said this was racist back then.
Yeah, but it is one of the first shows to feature a predominantly Asian American cast. It was a ratings flop, though. It was canceled after five episodes. He's a Japanese inventor who is sent with his family from Tokyo. And of course, he has an American live in to govern as his children, almost like a ripoff of King and I type situation. Yeah. But his inventions included underpants with a built-in transistor radio and flash in a can, a coin-operated sun lamp in the restroom. So they gave him these kind of crazy inventions they thought would be funny. Didn't work. It really unfortunate this happened to such a great actor who, you know, was able to prove his chops in the Karate Kid films because he was, you know, not going to be cast in those movies because of stuff like this and Happy Days. But I'm glad he actually did.
Yeah,
but
he did not approve of this.
Mr. T and Tina.
Yeah.
So, there you go. Mr. T and Tina is my number two.
Yeah, on my honorable mention. So, yeah.
Okay, so let's do your number. Are we at number two already for novelty songs?
Number two.
What you got?
So have you ever heard of the Ilves Brothers?
The Ilves, no.
Ilves. So they're this comedy duo from Norway. They used to have, I don't know if they still have it, but a Norwegian talk show called Tonight with Ilves. Anyway, they made this video in 2013.
Really?
And it went viral, okay, thanks to the internet and YouTube and all that. Becoming just this huge internet phenomenon, okay? And just so many views that Warner Music, it got their attention, and it's this electronic dance novelty song, and you've talked about it before, The Fox.
Yeah.
What does The Fox say? What does The Fox say?
Yes, yeah.
So when it debuted, because it had already kind of made the YouTube rounds, it debuted at number 29 on the top 100.
Yeah.
And it was selling like 75,000 copies a week.
It's a good little dance song, though, too. Good beat.
Oh, it is. But by 2021, it had already amassed over a billion views.
Wow.
And what's crazy about it to me is they didn't set out to make a hit song. It was made to be an anti-hit song, just kind of tongue-in-cheek, as a part of the, you know, announcing their new season on this Norwegian talk show. They never imagined that it would catch on like it did. Like,
yeah.
What the fuck, see?
Ding, 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 ding. Now when you said it like that, I can see maybe the possible, you know, what the fox, you know.
WTF?
Kinda, yeah.
I don't think that's what they were doing.
Okay. All right.
Again, they're Norwegian. I don't even know if they know WTF.
Okay. Gotcha. So. Gotcha. So that's a good one. That's a recent one, too.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it is.
And it actually is an album
I go from Purple People Eater to what the fuck say?
And it's in the category that it fits. So that's cool that you actually did that.
I'm going to key your car before you leave the studio today.
Number two was a amazingly timed parody that played off the greatest, well, I don't want to say the greatest, but the biggest album of the 80s when Michael Jackson's Thriller came out. Everybody was excited when, you know, he had a couple, The Girl Is Mine and stuff, and when Beat It came out, it was something new because he had Eddie Van Halen on it, had rock elements. I remember the first time hearing Beat It, it just kind of took over the whole world. It was like, man, this is a great song. So Weird Al Yankovic, who had some parodies lined up, like, you know, Another One Rides the Bus, which he sent into Dr. Demento.
Like a Surgeon.
That was after.
Oh.
I Love Rocky Road. He had that going. He had the Lucy one, which I first heard one, which was a playoff of Mickey by Tony Basil.
Oh, Lucy, you're so fine.
Yeah. So he did that whole situation. And My Bologna, which was a parody of My Sharona. But when he really leaped into superstardom in the novelty room, world, Weird Al Yankovic took Beat It and made Eat It.
Yes.
And he did a video which was almost to the T.
Yeah, spot for spot.
But fun stuff, like, you know, there's a scene where one of the gang members in Beat It pulls a girl's hair back and kisses her or whatever. He pulls the girl's head off.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, he has the banana and he eating all that stuff when, you know, he's doing the Michael Jackson in his room singing thing. The gang member has a smiley face on the back of his jacket. This is, you know, so many great, a great parody is to take something that, you know, people consider popular or a piece of art and to really kind of play off of it and do it almost exactly the same with these little bit of comedic
just
twists.
Nuanced.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he does, I mean, shot for shot. And by the time he released this, people had seen the Beat It video hundreds of times.
Yeah. I remember it was like a big, you know, MTV at the time used to do world premieres and play a video
right
every hour, you know, on the hour. They played the top of the hour. Eat It was this one of these videos because it was such, it took on, you know, so quickly. Beat It was so big. Weird Al Yankovic took Eat It and did it. And the funny thing is, if you've seen the Complete Al, which is kind of a fake documentary of his life, he does this funny scene where Michael Jackson, he has to go to Michael Jackson's castle and ask for approval, and you just see this kind of like a Roman Empire scene where he has the thumb going in between up and down and finally goes up that he could do it. Of course it's a gloved hand, so we know it's Michael Jackson. But Eat It is my number two best novelty song of all time.
I know this isn't our radio show where we talk about music and stuff, but I saw Weird Al live years ago, and I've got to say, as crazy as this sounds, first of all, he did a costume change nearly for every song, okay? and he did the fat suit for Fat and everything.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But I would classify it as one of my top five concerts.
Oh, wow.
And I smiled the whole time. I mean, my face was hurting. And he is just, he loves his audience and gives back. He really, you can tell that it's just this fun party for him and everybody on stage. And what's interesting is the musicians that he has, when you consider the work that he's doing, all of these different genres. One moment he's playing Nirvana, one moment he's playing Madonna songs or whatever. These guys were so good, they could emulate anything.
Yeah, his band is really good.
I wanted to ask, though, on this, does Eddie Van Halen play the solo that he plays in Eat It?
I mean, in
Beat It?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No. He probably wouldn't. You know, they just, try to get close as possible. Yeah.
Well, it's dead on.
And that's the funny thing in the video too, where he plays the solo and his hands, the thing catches on fire.
Yes. Great stuff.
Explodes. All right, so
yeah, I'm excited about that one.
We're on to our number one worst sitcom. Mine was Hello, Larry.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Let me do my honorable mentions before George will do his first.
Yeah, I've got some honorable mentions.
They include Big John, Little John from 1976, which aired actually, you know, 30-minute show. Basically, it was Herb Edelman and Robbie Rist.
Yeah, who I forgot about this one.
Cousin Oliver from
the Brady Bunch.
Brady Bunch. Yeah. But, of course, he would change from a grown man to a little boy, which didn't make any sense because Herb Edelman was black-haired and bald, and Robbie Rist was like this blonde kid, and didn't make sense to me. But anyway, that was me trying to figure out as a kid. Me and the Chimp from 1972.
That's on my honorable mention,
where
yes.
Where we have Ted Bessel from That Girl. And this is from Gary Marshall, too. I didn't realize.
So. Gary Marshall and Thomas Miller.
Who did like Happy Days and stuff.
Right, right. They actually go on to have a good sitcom. Do you remember the name of the chimp?
No.
Buttons.
But it's weird. Wasn't there like a big kind of monkey ape kind of fetish in the 70s? Oh,
you had BJ and the Bear.
Yeah, you had Any Which Way But Loose.
Anyway, yeah, that's an orangutan. But
The whole kind of primate type situation.
I don't know. Yeah, crazy.
A lot of entertainment. Carter Country, which ran for a couple seasons in 1977, playing off the Jimmy Carter thing, but, you know, it got in the way of the lineup. It was like, you know, it was like Three's Company, Carter, you know, you're messing me up here. A Year at the Top from 1977, which starred Paul Schaefer and Greg Evigan as musicians who sell their soul to the devil. Only lasted a few episodes. Spinoffs of Sanford and Son, The Sanford Arms and Grady. Having Sanford and Son without Sanford is a problem.
Yeah, because he was a secondary character on that show, and they didn't really know how to flesh it out.
Yeah.
On his own show.
I mean, it worked with Frasier, but you know, with Grady, they didn't. Yeah, you're right. It was kind of like, let's just stick Grady in these situations.
It'll be funny. People will love it.
I do like the actor Whitman Mayo.
He's good.
Did some other stuff, but yeah, you know, put in a bad situation.
Doomed
there.
To bad writing.
Yeah. Co-ed Fever, which was a tried to play off the Animal House craze.
Yes. Yeah, I know.
And finally, my San Pedro Beach Bums. Another one of those shows that got in the way of Welcome by Cotter lineup. It was just these guys. Stuart Penkin was in there who hung around the beach. Nothing really happened, and no one really watched.
I vaguely remember this.
And it was put in like the lineup. It was like, after Welcome Back, Cotter, I'm like, what are they doing?
Well, because they try to feed the audience that you'll stay on the channel and watch this thing, and but we'll give it some life.
Didn't work with the – at first, just listen to that title, San Pedro Beach Bums. I mean, do you want to watch those guys?
I think I saw a show or two. I don't remember much from it, though.
All I remember is Stuart Penkin from not necessarily the news and a couple other movies. That's all.
So here's my honorable mention. And I kind of have mixed feelings about this because I was a young boy.
Are these TV shows, sitcoms?
These are...
I'm
just going to say everything. It's not like I've already blown
not like Doctor
this.
Who or something like that. Okay.
No, settle down with the Doctor Who thing. So Hee Haw Honeys...
Yeah.
So it was basically the attractive women of Hee Haw,
which I did appreciate.
Then that's what I'm saying. At this age, when this was on, they tried to do this spinoff. Crazy Kathy Lee Gifford was in this.
She was a Hee Haw honey.
She was a Hee Haw honey, but just didn't really work. Surprisingly, Norman Lear, who had the Jeffersons and All in the Family and all that, he had a show called In the Beginning. Do you remember this?
That was McLean Stevenson,
that's
too, right?
McLean Stevenson.
He was a priest.
His father, Clary.
Yeah.
And very liberal sister, Agnes. Mm-hmm. They ran a mission in Maryland or Baltimore.
Does it really matter at this point?
Well, sorry. Just trying to get it right. Have you ever heard of a show called Dog and Cat?
Yeah. That was like a crime show, right?
Yes. Kim Basinger's, after her modeling career, this was her first thing. And two cops, one is a veteran detective, while the other one is sexy partner.
But this is like an hour-long drama, right?
I'm telling you, I'm just going through my list of 70 shows. You already mentioned Me and the Chimp. Did you ever see Lanigan's Rabbi?
No.
Okay, so again, not a sitcom. NBC, when they were doing all that Sunday mystery movie thing. Okay. Gemini Man, Struck by Lightning.
Okay, that's a sitcom.
Yeah, you mentioned that. And another Gary Marshall contribution about two Vegas showgirls.
I remember this.
Called Who's Watching the Kids?
That was Jim Belushi. And then,
yes,
this almost made my list. It was like weird. I was so confused because the actors Linda Goodfriend and Scott Baio were still doing Happy Days.
Yeah.
And they're put on this show too. And then they had Blansky's Beauties, which was another spinoff with Nancy Walker about the same thing, them being in Vegas as showgirls.
And yeah.
It was just so a mess.
They're trying to raise their siblings and be showgirls.
It was just.
I think Gary Marshall just liked showgirls.
Well, I think he was spread. They were trying to ask for more shows. Hey, Gary, you got any more shows? Let me take these actors that are well known on Happy Days and throw them on these other roles to confuse everybody, and then stick Jim Belushi in there too. So, yeah, that's a good one.
So, those are the honorable mentions. Do we want to do number one song?
Well, no. Do your number one sitcom.
Okay.
We'll do number one
song. So I'm pretty excited about this because I feel like I'm getting all the time that I spent watching it back somehow.
Okay.
Like this is a redemption moment. So, you know, there's RoboCop and the Terminator. Have you ever heard of an android cop called Yo-Yo?
Yes. Holmes and Yo-Yo.
Holmes and Yo-Yo. So it's this awful, awful comedy, Detective Holmes, which that right there.
And I was looking forward to it, the two, and I saw it on the TV guy. I'm like, this is cool. It's a computer guy.
Yeah, and he's got the computer in his stomach.
Yeah.
And, he acts very non-human. So they have these cases and stuff, but Holmes is teaching Yo-Yo, a full-grown man.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I forget the actor's name, but...
John Shuck.
How to be human, okay. And, of course, Yo-Yo helps Holmes with cases because of his analytical mind and everything. TV Guide says it's one of the worst shows ever made. And, yeah, that should be underlined and highlighted because it was really bad. So,
and the actors are good, too. Richard B. Schull and John Shuck coming off MASH and stuff.
Right.
And, you know, he ended up doing a stint later on the Munsters revival, playing Herman Munster. I guess because of the tallness thing. But yeah, that's a good selection. Holmes and Yo-Yo. All right, so let's go to my honorable mentions for novelty song. We'll do George's two, and then we'll go to our number one novelty song. Honorable Valley Girl by Moon Unit Zappa, of course, backed by her dad, Frank Zappa.
Gag me with the spoon.
The Streak was on mine. Rubber Biscuit by the Chimps, later done by the Blues Brothers.
Oh.
Rubber Biscuit.
I didn't realize that was a remake.
Yeah. Cool. What do you want for nothing?
Rubber Biscuit.
Monster Mash, which just missed my list because it's, you know, it is Halloween related, but... you know, such a great novelty song.
Yes.
People still play it to this day on Halloween. By Bobby Boris Pickett. Disco Duck by Rick Dees. I had a chance to meet Rick Dees. You know, I always appreciated what he did. They say this is a song to destroy disco because, you know, we saw disco albums after this with Ethel Merman, disco versions of fight songs, disco everything. So
Disco Star Wars.
Yeah.
I had a disco Star Wars album.
Miko.
Yeah.
That's good stuff. And C.W. McCall with Convoy, which ended up being taking that CB craze, and they actually came out with a movie later called Convoy with Kris Kristofferson. So C.W. McCall, Convoy. I saw him perform it on American Bandstand, and when
that's got to be weird
when he's lip syncing it, basically.
Oh yeah.
So when he did the part, you know, did the CB stuff, easiest job ever. He put the CB up to his mouth.
Oh, nice.
So he didn't have to like you know. Breaker one, well, rubber ducky. You know,
here's a spoiler. It's my number one, so I'll talk more in depth about.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. Okay. Well, go ahead and do your number one then.
Well, it's 1976 Convoy.
The
thing of it is the reason that this was such a big deal. Okay, so before the internet, you'd communicate with strangers over long distances via ham radios. Okay. In the early part of the 20th century, but then came citizen band radios or CBs in the 40s. And by the late 60s, because of advances in electronics that, you know, they shrunk everything down and the weight and the size of the cost, people could have a CB. And the reason that this caught fire, you had CB clubs and you had the slang and jargon.
CB clubs where you got like six CDs for a penny?
No, that's a different club.
Oh, sorry.
But in 1973, something happened in the U.S., the oil crisis. And thank you, President Ford, okay? He reduced, or the nation, the government reduced the speed limit down to 55 miles an hour, okay? So you remember all that. The odd gas days where you could only buy gas.
I don't remember that, but I remember.
Really?
I remember 55 mile.
Remember you could, first of all, there were gas lines, and you could only buy gas if your license plate number was, if you had an even license plate number, you could only buy it every other day on the even day.
Oh, wow.
And the odd day was for license plates that ended with an odd number.
You were set back a lot earlier than I was in the future and into the past.
So. We're the same. We're like the same age. We're like 2 years apart, aren't we?
All right. So what else you got?
So anyway, whenever they reduced the speed limit to 55, that really jacked with commercial truckers' productivity and their money, because it's taking them longer to get there. But with CBs, they could communicate to each other and notify of speed traps that the police had set up, or the best station, gas stations for supplies and fuel and everything. And then in 74, there was actually this strike protesting the new speed limit for these trucking. And all of that sets up C.W. McCall's song, which, like you said, it inspired the Sam Peckinpah movie with Kris Kristofferson and Ally McGraw.
Burt Young.
Burt Young. Ernest Borgnine.
Yes.
Which I look forward to one day, hopefully doing a show.
Top five Ernest. Yeah, I'm up.
I think it should be like 10. I don't think we should even have a second category, just all Ernest. But it's the song, and you can check it out on the link. It's about a fictional trucker, that a rebellion. He drives from the West Coast to the East Coast without stopping. And Jim kind of talked about it. There's this simulated CB conversation with all this CB slang, okay? And then you have the narration of the story, which is sung. And then you have the chorus, which is a really good chorus, in my opinion. But he had a sequel to this song. Do you remember the sequel?
Convoy Part 2?
Pretty much. It's called Round the World with the Rubber Duck. Okay. So this came out in early 76, and before the year was over, he had a sequel to it. And that also went to number one. So that is my number one novelty song, Convoy.
Convoy. We got a great big convoy. Da, 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 da. Great singers, too, on the convoy.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, so my number one is, wow, this is when I was in radio for a while, and I would do a lot of these kind of, people would say, you've done a something like this, and this is what I'm talking about, is Mr. Jaws, which is a novelty song by Dickie Goodman, released on Cash Records in 1975. Now, Dickie Goodman ended up doing a lot of this stuff, basically doing parodies of songs, and this is the first one where he did one on the energy crisis you talked about.
Yeah.
But the one that really took off was this one, because Jaws was like the first blockbuster ever.
Oh, yeah.
Where people were like, that was like, you got to go see this summer blockbuster. That's, yeah. I think it was the term summer blockbuster came from Jaws. So in the record, which is a kind of a reporter response, and the response is coming from other hit records.
Right. All the responses are snippets of
other songs.
Of real songs.
So he interviews the shark, whom he calls Mr. Jaws, which is the title of the album. I mean, the title of the song.
Right.
He also interviews Brody, Hooper, and Quint, which are the main characters of Jaws.
Right, right.
And this is the first to popularize the break-in of the music sampling. It peaked at number four. Number four, this is our highest charting one.
Wow.
On the Hot 100 1975. On Cashbox, it was the number one single.
I remember this song. It's a lot of fun.
It's a lot of fun. So what I didn't know, doing a little research in it, that the apparently, originally the songs were sampled. They were just taken straight out of the songs. But when their record became a hit, you know who's coming calling?
Oh.
The record companies. Songs were later replaced by sound-alike recordings.
Oh,
which,
really?
Yeah, which I didn't know, because the sound-alike sounded. It's almost like Stars on 45. I didn't know were not the Beatles for some reason. But this is a guy from...
Why does John Lennon have a lisp?
It was the guy from Radar Love. What's the band? Golden Earring.
Oh, yeah.
Thing. So, which sounded great to me. But here's the songs featured in the answer. They have the You have the main title from Jaws at the very beginning.
Yeah, Bono.
Dynamite by Bazooka. Please, Mr. Please by Olivia Newton-John. How Sweet It Is by James Taylor. These are all huge songs at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Why Can't We Be Friends by War. Get Down Tonight by Casey and the Sunshine Band. The Hustle by Van McCoy. Love Will Keep Us Together. Rhinestone Cowboy. One of These Nights by the Eagles. Jive Talking. I'm Not in Love by 10cc. And Midnight Blue by Melissa Manchester. Yeah. So,
and that's what made it fun is once you get the gag early on, you're like, okay, what other songs are they going to try to fold into this thing? So yeah, that, and they did it. I know you're talking about Mr. Jaws, but I remember several recordings using this style.
He did a lot of movie parodies after this and a lot of things. He did some pop culture things too. Like he did one, I think his last recording was one on safe sex that he did in 88 before Dickie Goodman passed away in 89. But he did, I remember buying the single for Kong for the King Kong movie.
I remember King Kong. Yes.
Yeah. And he did one for E.T. was the last one that kind of charted that. I remember Casey Kasem introducing the introduction for, which he included like Take It Away by Paul McCartney and a couple other things of that time when E.T. came out.
But, but this one was a lot of fun.
This one was a lot of fun. Mr. Jaws is my number one. And in the honor to honor Dickie Goodman, I've kind of written kind of a Mr. Jaws about our experience here. So if we can do this real quick, and I know you're really quick, as evidenced by this show today, that you're really quick and can think on your feet. Because you had to make up your entire list after this.
No, so, my list just had a few misgivings.
Okay, so basically, I'm going to do the same thing as Mr. Jaws.
And what am I doing?
You're going to fill in the songs. You're going to be the songs. Yeah, I know you're a great singer.
Oh, so I'm just...
You're just going to do the
songs.
So
I'm not... We're not going to do like they did, where they actually had the song.
You're going to sing the song, because we can't pay the record company. Why would we want to pay the record company?
Well, okay. I'm just trying to get it... What we're doing here.
Consider me Dickie Goodman Jr. You ready? I'm going to do the whole, you know, because he starts Mr. Jaws. We're here on a beach.
So, okay.
Okay. So you ready?
Okay.
All right. Are you really ready?
I am probably not ready. I'm to go on record.
So this This will be our crispy coated robots explanation of what we're doing in Mr. Jaws fashion.
All right.
All right.
Yeah.
We are here in the studio where two time travelers have been sent back in time to save the future. Tell me, in the future, what happens to Mother Earth?
She's gone.
Wow, that was pretty good. Okay, I'm sorry. Broke character. All right. If Earth is destroyed, what can you guys do to save it?
Do the hustle.
Wait a minute. You can't steal the same joke from Mr. Jaws. He says the same thing in Mr. Jaws. What are you going to do now,
right,
Mr. Jaws? Do the hustle.
Well,
all right, this project is over. First of all, you messed up the sitcom thing, and now you mess up my Mr. Jaws. Oh, boy.
Well, you get what you pay for, Jimbo.
Let's just go to the board now.
All right. So we have only one match on between both categories.
Yeah.
And that is Hello Larry. Sadly, McClain
Hello
Stevens.
Hello Larry. Portland is a long way from LA.
So which do you want to do first? You know what? Wait a minute. One, two, three.
Oh, yeah. We only have like a couple of sitcoms.
So, we only need to eliminate one. So we've got the Ropers, Hello Larry Makes It.
Yeah.
Quark, Dusty's Trail, Mr. T.
And Tina. Yeah.
T and Tina. And Holmes and Yo-Yo.
So we just got six.
Yeah. We just need to eliminate one.
Well, Ropers, in the memory of Pat Morita, I'm going to take him out just because I love the art, and I don't want to put him on a worst list.
It is so racist too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll just go ahead and go with Ropers, Hello Larry, Quark, Dusty's Trail, and Holmes and Yo-Yo. And then we'll give you George's list of variety shows that he also did on this.
I was so excited about Super Train.
He didn't even check the own artwork that he actually put together, folks, that says worst sitcom of the 70s. But anyway, let's go ahead and move on to our worst.
I can't even make up an excuse for how it happened.
Let's go to
the power of Super Train.
You got just so infatuated doing some research. You're like, oh, Super Train.
Super Train, you know, because with Snowpiercer coming out and everything, I'm like, oh, this is Super Train. They do a much better job. Okay,
Super Train with violence.
But this is, and what's crazy is the graphic novel for Snowpiercer,
for Super Train,
totally different from the television series. But I like the television series.
Is there a graphic novel for Super Train? Or the Brady Bunch variety.
You know, honestly, at the time, Marvel Comics made a comic about everything.
They did. I have the Spider-Man with the SNL
I have
cast.
A 2001 comic book from Marvel Comics, Space Odyssey 2001.
Oh, wow.
So they did everything. They probably did. If you happen to own the Super Train Marvel Comics Special Edition, please write crispycoatedrobots@gmail.com. We would like to know about it. You'll be honored. All right. So let's move to this novelty song thing.
Gotcha.
Mr. Jaws, yes. Fish Heads, which that's just a coincidence. Those are near each other. Rappin' Rodney, The Streak, Take Off.
Yeah.
Purple People Eater. Wilhelm Scream there.
Shebul.
The King Tut. The Fox. What does the fox say? Eat It. And
Convoy.
Breaker. We got Convoy.
And they're all good, actually. They're all pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know what. I think, you know, for me, The Streak and Purple People Eater, even though they're different topics, they kind of have that same feeling to me. I don't know.
They're both very silly. Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say let's pick one of those to kind of get that country-esque type early kind of parody. So I'm going to let you choose since they're both your
I'll do this. I like The Streak.
Okay.
Yeah.
The Streak's good.
Yeah, they call him The Streak.
And for me, I guess from the 80s is Rappin' Rodney and Take Off. So I could probably pair off one of those. And as much as I like Bob and Doug McKenzie.
Okay. So for me, I never liked Rappin' Rodney. I know you said that you owned it. I felt like it was a money grab.
I liked it.
Take Off. I know you did. But Take Off, it was the next logical extension of what they were doing in comedy for me. So,
Are you going to disrespect Rappin' Rodney one more time?
Yes, I will.
Rappin' Rodney can't get a break. It's just Rappin' Rodney can't get a break.
Yeah, I'm gonna disrespect him and mark
really
him out.
Yeah. Oh, tell you what, I get no respect at all. I can't even get on this list of a guy who puts variety shows in for sitcom
shows.
Right.
That's
I'll
right.
tell you
so
what,
take
tell
off
you, Dr. Vinny Bubatz over here. I'll tell you this is crazy.
Take Off, eh?
Wow.
All right.
I disrespect.
Oh, and we nixed that.
Okay. Purple People Eater is gone, so The Streak, Take Off, Mr. Jaws, Fish Head, King Tut, The Fox, Eat It, and Convoy.
Yeah. I think King Tut was
That was a good one that actually charted. I mean, for Mr. Jaws being number one song, I think that probably has to actually be in there. And then you can choose the last one.
Circled Fish Heads.
Yeah, Fish Heads did not chart, I don't think. So
out the link. I don't care.
It was a video check out the hit. Link. It was a video hit. So,
One more.
Fox, Eat It, and Convoy. Convoy was such a big thing too. And Eat It or Convoy needs to go in because those are both kind of taking a cultural something and just really kind of.
I think that I love Weird Al. Like I said, I've actually seen him perform, but I think we go with something other than Eat It. Because
really? Eat It was his biggest song.
Well, I love Bad, you know, where he does Fat.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate his artistry to sounding exactly the same and looking the same videos and everything. Nirvana said, Kurt Cobain from Nirvana said, I knew we made it when Weird Al parodied us.
Yeah, yeah.
So I love Weird Al. But I think for this, I think it's a different type of novelty song.
I'll tell you what, no respect for Weird Al. This guy over here puts variety shows
I thought you were going to do a Weird Al impersonation.
No, I'll tell you, there's no respect at all for this guy.
I saw UHF in the theater.
I
love
too.
Weird Al.
I did too.
But
I'll tell you what, this guy over here, variety show guy.
So, and I'll take out Fish Heads.
Okay. Yeah, as much as I appreciate it, it didn't really chart or make kind of a, it was kind of a cult thing that I think, you know. I'll tell you what, my doctor said he had one on my knee. He gave me a sponge. Ba-dum-psh. Okay, go ahead. Which one are you going to take?
Well, what do you say?
I kind of say Eat It, but if you want to do Convoy, I'm okay with that.
Mm,
I mean, if you feel that strongly about,
well, no, Edith, I just because of the time, but both are playing off something culturally that happened. So I mean, Convoy was something that was huge.
I noticed we don't really have, you don't say anything about the Fox at all.
We don't really have a country one in there either.
Okay.
Well, the Streak is relatively country. So
yeah.
So let's go.
Your choice.
We'll go ahead and go with Convoy. Okay. I'll cave in.
Sound disappointed.
Yeah, I'll cave into the guy who came up with a bunch of variety shows for sitcoms.
Again, I thought it was shows. I apologize. I'll tell you to what, the future.
No respect at all. No respect all right, for rapping Rodney. It's terrible. All right, so go ahead and go to crispycoderobots.com. You know what I'm saying? And find out more information about it. Get some respect for us here.
Yep.
Instead of the disrespect from George. But anyway, so yeah, go to crispycoderobots.com, and we have all the information there, all the albums we do, and all that great stuff. And you can also buy some merch. So let's shoot this thing on up, George. Let's go ahead and shovel it. And disrespect Rapping Rodney one more time. You're not on the list.
I like Rodney Dangerfield.
And then we'll go ahead and...
I just don't think that's a...
Obviously, you haven't listened to it. Okay, you got it? Cool. All right, and then we'll...
I'll race you. Digging.
Well, you have to say the line, so I'll win.
All right.
And remember, there's always... tomorrow.
There is, if you're respected around here. I get no respect at all from the George here. Give me another variety show, boss.